For me, I wanted to come forward and put my name on this. I've been a survivor. I am a survivor. And I know I'm not alone. And I buried this for 10 years, 11 years. And it's destroyed me from the inside out.
That's Kyle Beach. He's the pro hockey player who has now stepped forward as the John Doe, detailing sexual abuse by a coach with the Chicago Blackhawks back in 2010. And here's National Hockey League Commissioner Gary Bettman speaking to Kyle's case.
It is clear that what happened was inappropriate, it was wrong on every level, and it was not handled correctly by the Blackhawks organization.
Today, ESPN NHL reporter Emily Kaplan explains how a team and a league failed one of its own by covering up abuse, and what happens now, a decade later, as the truth is told. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, November 2nd. This is ESPN Daily. Emily Kaplan, thanks for talking with us. Thanks for your reporting on this story.
Thanks, Pablo.
So we're here to talk about sexual abuse allegations in the Chicago Blackhawks organization. And this story is complex. Of course it is. It's a story that spans more than a decade. It's still ongoing. And I just want to start here, Emily, with the player who came forward as the John Doe in this situation, Kyle Beach. Who is Kyle Beach?
So, Pablo, in hockey, we often identify players by their birth year, and Kyle is a 90, which means he's currently 31 years old. He was born in North Vancouver. He played in the Western Hockey League for juniors.
You know what?
Beach and Lucas, by the way.
Have one. He's got a 15-year-old.
Right.
Beach.
And a 17-year-old.
He was definitely a promising prospect. In his last year in the WHL, for example, he scored 52 goals in 68 games. Big power forward type at the time that was really in vogue in the NHL when he was coming up. The Blackhawks drafted him in the first round in 2008.
My name's Kyle Beach. I'm from Kelowna, BC. I play left wing for the Everett Silvertips. And my favorite NHL player has to be Jerome Iginla.
And he doesn't even get a full pro season before the Blackhawks call him up to join the team in the playoffs as a Black Ace. And those are minor league guys that get to join the big club for the playoff run.
So Kyle Beach is this top prospect in the Blackhawks organization, Emily, in 2010. And he's reporting to the team allegations that video coach Brad Aldrich had sexually assaulted him. And it sounds like at the time, this is more than a decade ago now, nothing happened behind the scenes in response to those accusations. But last week, we got this 100-plus page report, which the entire world got to see.
Yeah, so we'll get into the events of 2010, but the long story short is nothing was done at the time. And then in May 2021, someone named John Doe, who we later find out to be Kyle Beach, files a lawsuit against the Blackhawks. And he only identifies as a former player. And he alleges that he was sexually assaulted by this video coach, Brad Aldrich, during the 2010 Stanley Cup run. And nothing was done about it by senior leaders. And his life was changed forever because of it.
Yeah. So the report, who was it commissioned by? What did it cover exactly?
So this lawsuit is filed in May 2021, and then the NHL comes to the Blackhawks and is like, look, this is serious. Do you want us to investigate it, or do you guys want to investigate it? And I always have to make this note when I talk about these type of stories. It's important to note the NHL does not have a specific domestic violence policy that is different than any other professional major men's league in North America. So all of these things are always handled on a case-by-case basis. Basically, the Blackhawks tell the NHL, we'll do a report. And the NHL says, okay, well, what are you going to do? Like, how legit is it going to be? The Blackhawks say, very legit. We're going to use this law firm named Jenner and Block. We'll have this guy, Reed Schar, lead it. He's a former assistant U.S. attorney. He's the same guy that was a lead investigator and prosecutor for former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. And the NHL says, okay, that sounds legit. So the Blackhawks commissioned this report by Jenner and Block. They interview 139 people, and we just wait until we get the findings of this report.
So the report is commissioned by the Blackhawks. What did they say they would do when the investigation was completed?
So they promised full transparency when the report came out. And I know there was a lot of people skeptical saying, okay, when they put out this report, part of it's going to be redacted or they're not going to show all of it. But I was told last weekend, the Blackhawks got a call about Sunday and said, hey, the report is ready. On Monday, everyone reads the report and digests it and figure out what's going on. And then by Tuesday, they announced that they're going to have a press conference and release the findings. So they knew it was coming. I do know, though, that that call over the weekend was like, oh, wow, it's here and let's go.
Yeah, so midweek last week is when Kyle Beach was named in public as John Doe. What prompted him to want to reveal his identity?
Well, you know, the report, like I said, was released fully, and he wasn't named in the report, but there were some identifying details that some people believe did dox him, such as what his weight was, what his size was, the age at the time. Some internet sleuths could do their own math. But the other reason that he wanted to come forward, because he felt vindicated, and he even said that in his interview with TSN, it was a sense of relief that it was no longer his word against everybody else's.
I don't think I or we could have ever imagined what would have going to come out of yesterday's press conference. And following it, just a great feeling of relief, vindication, and it was no longer my word against everybody else's.
He felt like there was all of these lies told in the media, a lot of misinformation.
Because a lot of things were made public, a lot of people were interviewed, and I really felt like there was a lot of lies told in the media. And it was very special and important to me to have that truth come out yesterday.
And for the truth to finally get out there, for these investigators to corroborate what he's been saying, what the Blackhawks senior management didn't take seriously, the thing that derailed his entire career, was so cathartic. And he felt that empowered him to come forward and share who exactly he was.
Yeah, that interview, Emily, with TSN, the sports network in Canada, our siblings up north, that was October 27th. It was an interview that I don't know if I have a comparison point for in terms of a male player being this frank about his alleged abuse. How would you describe what Kyle Beach said?
Brave is the first word I use. It was so courageous. He was unflinching and he was direct. You know, he talked about the emotion he had felt when the report was released. And again, that sense of vindication. He cried, he smiled, he cried some more.
Yesterday was a day of many emotions. I cried, I smiled, I laughed, I cried some more. It's tough to recall these moments.
But he also went into more details about what happened to him and the way he was made felt by these men in power who just dismissed him. And anyone who watched that interview, and if you haven't watched it, I so recommend you walk away just saying this guy was failed so hard by hockey culture, by people who were supposed to be leaders, by people who said that they were going to employ and take care of him. And it's just really devastating.
So Kyle Beach says clearly, as you alluded to, that his experience in this sport, the thing that he loved to do his whole life, it was changed forever by what happened with Brad Aldrich, who at the time was an assistant coach with the Blackhawks. I'm curious how his interview was received, not just by the public, Emily, but by the sport, by his colleagues in professional hockey in the NHL.
I've talked to a lot of players in this past week, Pablo, and they're blown away by Kyle's bravery, by what he went through. And I think there's not necessarily a sense of reckoning, but maybe a sense of looking inward, saying, how could we be complicit in this also? And so I believe this to be a landmark interview because this is something that could change hockey culture forever, because now we have a face to the name of these allegations. Now we have the real visual of the human collateral of these type of mistakes. And seeing Kyle so bravely speak up, I think made a lot of players say, you know what, if I do see something going wrong, I can speak up and it's okay. And that's actually the right thing to do.
And as for the people in management, Emily, people have had to step down from high-level, high-powered jobs around hockey because of this report now. What's happened with the people who were in Blackhawks leadership back in 2010?
Yeah, so the report comes out and the Blackhawks ownership, which is Rocky Wirtz and his son Danny Wirtz, who are the team CEO, basically realize no leaders from 2010 can still be within our organization. That's not okay. And the two men left are Stan Bowman, who is the GM and president of Hockey Ops. He's forced to resign. And Al McIsaac, the senior director of hockey operations, also forced to resign. These are two guys, especially Stan, who are viewed as the architects of three Stanley Cups in Chicago. This right. is a guy that was probably going to go to the Hall of Fame. He's the son of Scotty Bowman, the winningest coach of all time. So it's pretty stunning just to see him leave like this. Joel Quenneville, who was the coach in Chicago at the time, was the coach of the Florida Panthers. They're undefeated, the best team in the league. I was told that Joel Quenneville believed that he was going to be okay. But he gets called into a meeting with Gary Bettman, his boss from the Florida Panthers. And basically, the Panthers in the league pressured him and said, it's not appropriate for you to be coaching right now. He resigns as well. The league fines the Blackhawks $2 million for what they call inadequate procedures and mishandling. And then Rocky Wirtz, the owner of the Blackhawks, writes a letter to the Hall of Fame and asks for Brad Aldrich's name to be removed from the Stanley Cup.
So as the sport, Emily, is turned upside down as a result of this, over the weekend, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman met with Kyle Beach personally. What do we know about that meeting?
We know that Kyle's lawyer was on the call as well. I know that Gary began it in a way that I've heard him begin a lot of these meetings with players where he says, you can call me Gary. That's something that he does to kind of show my door is open. I'm listening. I've heard they've had a discussion about what can be done in the future to assure that what happened to Kyle never happens to any other player again. Gary expressed his sincere regret to Kyle. And he also told Kyle that the league would take care of counseling or services for him and his family as long as he needs. Understanding the damage that was done changed his entire life, and there's no way to undo that.
Emily, all of it happened more than a decade ago now. It's important to point that out, too. Why has it taken so long for these revelations, for these consequences, to actually take effect?
Well, frankly, Pablo, it took so long because it was covered up. It wasn't handled at the time. It was swept under the rug. Brad Aldrich was able to leave the Blackhawks organization with the organization not giving any red flags to his future employers that this could be a bad actor. And when you don't talk about these type of things, they go away. And that's exactly what the Blackhawks wanted. But then in 2021, Kyle finally mustered up the courage to file a lawsuit against the team to talk about the damages that he suffered, and that changed everything.
And Brad Aldrich, Emily, you know, Kyle Beach is not the only alleged victim that he's been involved with, right?
Yeah, 3 years after he leaves the Blackhawks, he's working with a high school team in Michigan, and he has sexual encounter with a 16-year-old boy. He is convicted of fourth-degree criminal sexual conduct, and he serves jail time and is now on Michigan's Registry of Sex Offenders.
So just to be very clear here, Emily, the fact that there was a cover-up, that led to more people getting victimized by him.
Yeah, sadly, that's right, Pablo.
All right, after the break, we have more questions about the original incident involving Kyle Beach and how the Blackhawks organization and the NHL, how they specifically handled all of this at the time.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Emily, back in 2010, as you said before, Kyle Beach, he's in the minor leagues at this point. He gets called up to the Blackhawks. He is this top prospect. He's 20 years old. How big of a moment is that for him, for anybody, really?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, that season he was in junior hockey. Again, 52 goals in 68 games. He was a very good player, but only plays four games in the AHL. And then it's very hard to make the jump right from junior hockey to the NHL. But him being called up showed what the organization thought of him, that they wanted him to be around this big team, around the championship culture to get that taste. And it pretended that the next year he would have a really good shot at making the roster.
So he gets called up, Emily. He travels with the team during the Western Conference Finals. And during that time, the full report from the law firm details several interactions that Kyle Beach had with Brad Aldridge, the video coach. And many of them are described as Aldridge inviting Beach to watch game tape to ostensibly improve his play, his performance on the ice, in private spaces like a hotel room. And these interactions, they then lead to the abusive incident in question in May 2010.
Yeah, so according to the lawsuit, Aldridge invited Kyle to his apartment under the premise that Aldridge would go over some game clips with him. But when Kyle arrived, the evening did not go as he expected it to. Both men are interviewed for the report. They both agree there was a sexual encounter that happens. Aldridge says it was completely consensual, while Kyle says it wasn't consensual at all. Beach also says that he was physically threatened. He was blocked by the only exit, and Aldridge was telling him, you'll never play in the NHL if you don't engage in these sex acts with me, and also if you tell anybody. And so Beach felt threatened.
The idea that Brad Aldridge had power, had this status on the team and influence over Kyle Beach's career, can you explain how that worked back in 2010? Like, why did Brad Aldridge have this level of power over him?
He's on the coaching staff, and I know a video coach isn't the head coach or an assistant coach, but it's someone that's around the team all the time. It's someone that's talking to that head coach and the general manager all the time. He's about 7 years older than Kyle Beach. He was 27 when this happened. Kyle was 20. Brad actually comes from a hockey family. His dad is a longtime employee of the Sharks organization, been around hockey his entire life. You know, I've had some conversations with people in hockey this week, and a lot of them have pointed out, okay, well, Kyle Beach was 20 years old, a big, strong power forward. How could he have been sexually assaulted by a video coach who's a lot smaller in stature? And honestly, those conversations frustrate the heck out of me because it shows that there's just this basic comprehension that a lot of people don't get about power dynamics and about what consent is. It's not always physical force at play. There's other factors such as intimidation, Brad Aldridge threatening his career, or coercion. And that seems to be what Kyle felt at this time. And, you know, there was rumors around the Blackhawks organization that Aldridge had threatened careers in the past.
Right. And the full report points out that a half dozen witnesses say they had also heard about Aldridge threatening players' careers along those lines. And so this traumatic encounter, Emily, it happens. And who does Kyle Beach tell at that point? Who does he go to?
So he called a confidant. The confidant is interviewed by the Jenner and Block investigators. And in that report, he says that when Kyle called him, he was crying. He could barely speak. The confidant was even wondering whether Kyle had gotten into a car accident because he couldn't even catch his breath. But he told him what happened, which is important. And then a couple days after that, Kyle gets the courage to tell Paul Vincent, who is on the Blackhawks staff, what happened. And Paul Vincent reports it up the food chain.
And what does the report say about how Brad Aldridge acted in the days and weeks after this?
According to the report, Brad Aldridge texted Kyle Beach repeatedly. He showed up to the practices that Kyle was at, specifically when the main team came off and the black ices like Kyle were still on the ice. And he had to interact with him and face him every single day after this happened.
So if Brad Aldridge, his alleged abuser, is there in person around him, what has Kyle said about how this affected him as he was going through this?
He said he felt extremely alone. In that TSN interview, he talked about feeling fearful those couple days. He just had his career threatened.
So I was scared, mostly. I was fearful. I had had my career threatened. I felt alone and dark. It's tough to recall these moments. I felt like I was alone and there was nothing I could do and nobody I could turn to for help.
So again, Kyle Beach had told Paul Vincent, a member of the coaching staff, what action was taken by the Blackhawks after Paul Vincent received that knowledge?
Right. So Paul Vincent tells his superiors, and then before a Western Conference final game against the San Jose Sharks, there's this meeting of the brain trust in a hotel room. And it involves pretty much all of the senior leadership. Stan Bowman, John McDonough, who was the team president at the time, Jay Blunk, who was right under McDonough, Joel Quenneville, also Kevin Cheveldayoff, who was an assistant GM. He's now the GM of the Winnipeg Jets. And basically, they all come together. And according to the report, all of these men have given wildly different accounts of what happened in that meeting. But the one thing we know is that nothing came out of that meeting immediately. Brett Aldridge stayed on the staff. He was with the team not only through the Stanley Cup final, but was given a day with the Stanley Cup, was given a Stanley Cup ring, was given his playoff bonuses.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that this was all happening while they were on their way to winning the Stanley Cup, Emily, how did that influence the decisions that were apparently not being made here?
Seemed to have influenced it a lot. There's a quote from Stan Bowman in the report where basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, Joel Quenneville, the coach, says, "We can't have this distract us. We are too close to the Stanley Cup. We can't address this now." And I think that tells you all you need to know about hockey culture, where people will do anything and sacrifice anything to win the Stanley Cup.
So all these team leaders knew, Emily. Did the players know?
This is kind of a topic of controversy right now because there's some players on the team, like Nick Boynton and Brent Sopel, who have come on the record and said everybody knew. Kyle, in his interview with TSN, said word spread around the locker room pretty quickly.
You've said that some of your teammates, after the fact, started using homophobic slurs. How soon after the assault was that happening?
Word spread pretty quick. I do believe that everybody in that locker room knew about it because the comments were made in the locker room. They were made on the ice. They were made around the arena with all different people of all different backgrounds, players, staff, media in the presence.
But there's other players who said they didn't know, or they didn't know all of the details. Like Patrick Kane, who's still on the team, said he didn't know John Doe was Kyle Beach until that day he did the TSN interview.
Yeah, I didn't know anything at the time. And, you know, even today, you know, Kyle came out as John Doe. That's the first time I knew that it was him. So as far as like the bullying and different comments, I don't remember any of that either.
Or Jonathan Toews, who was the captain in 2010 and still is the captain now, said he didn't hear about the incident until the following training camp. And even then, he still didn't hear all of it or the gory details, as he put it. But according to the report, when Kyle did show up for that next training camp, there were some teammates who teased him and bullied him and said homophobic slurs on the ice towards him because of this allegation. And that's just really hard to hear.
So what did eventually happen to Brett Aldridge?
So he remains with the team after these senior leaders are made aware of the allegations. And in that time, a 22-year-old intern from the Blackhawks says that Aldridge groped them. And finally, it raises to the level of HR. And in June, Aldridge is called into a meeting with HR. And basically, he's given two choices. He can either resign or he can partake in an investigation. And Aldridge chooses to resign and no investigation takes place. When Aldridge leaves the organization, he's paid $20,000 in severance, a $15,000 playoff bonus. He gets a review from Joel Quenneville, which is a positive review. It congratulates him on helping them win the Stanley Cup, says he's a good employee, and he's sent on his way.
What was that like, watching him on a daily basis interact with the team, getting a Stanley Cup ring?
To be honest, Rick, I think the only way I can describe it is that I felt sick. I felt sick to my stomach. I reported this, and I was made aware that it made it all the way up the chain of command. Nothing happened. It was like his life was the same as it was the day before. And then when they won, to see him paraded around, lifting the cup at the parade, at the team pictures, at the celebrations, it made me feel like I didn't exist. It made me feel that I wasn't important. it made me feel like that he was in the right and I was wrong. There's no words to describe it, right? There really isn't.
Coming up, what breaking his silence means for Kyle Beach and what the National Hockey League has to do next.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So just to keep the accounting going here then, this is two alleged incidents of abuse before the 2013 case in Michigan involving the minor that resulted in that conviction that you described before of Brad Aldrich. All of which makes me wonder, Emily, what happened to Kyle Beach's hockey career? I mean, as this guy is allowed to go free and live his life, what happens to the person he had allegedly abused?
Kyle never makes it in the NHL. He plays another couple years in the AHL, the NHL's top minor league team. It's not working for him in the Blackhawks organization. He gets traded to the Rangers. He plays with their AHL team in Hartford. And then he goes off to Europe, and that's where he's played pretty much since 2014, in places like Austria and Slovakia and Germany, where he plays now. And it's really hard not to connect the trauma that he endured and the fact that there was no resolution, there was no closure, there was no one taking him seriously, and his career derailing.
Does Kyle Beach see this so clearly, Emily? Like the abuse from Aldrich, the team's response or non-response as it happens, that this all derailed his career.
You know, in the interview with Rick Westhead, he says, I'm just beginning the process, because he suppressed this memory for so long and he buried it because he was trying to chase his dreams.
I suppressed this memory and buried this memory to chase my dreams and pursue the career that I loved and the game that I love of hockey.
And now I think he's coming to terms with the fact that this prevented him from chasing those dreams and reaching those dreams and goals. And, you know, he talked about it and he's looking back now and he realizes it definitely did have impact on his life.
But now that I'm beginning to heal and I look back, it definitely had impacts on my life. I did stupid things. I acted out. I snapped. I did things that I never could imagine doing. I relied on alcohol. I relied on drugs.
And when you hear all of that, you can see there's a clear cause and consequence between what happened with him with the Blackhawks organization and where his career ended up.
Where did the union come into play here? You're describing things that theoretically the NHLPA might have been able to help him with, but it doesn't sound like that happened either.
Yeah, when we talk about next steps of this story, I think the player's relationship with the NHLPA is going to be one to follow, because the NHLPA was made aware of the allegations that Kyle Beach made, and they referred him to their player substance abuse and behavior program and then never followed up. And that does not sit well with a lot of players, because the NHLPA inherently is there to protect them. I'm texting with one player this weekend, and he said, for 9 years, the NHLPA knew and did nothing to investigate nor help Kyle in dealing with this trauma. So Don Fehr is the head of the NHLPA. He's been there for a while. He did come out with a statement and said, I acknowledge that I was part of the system that failed Kyle Beach, but he doesn't take any personal accountability. And that does not sit well with players, because accountability is something that's really big in hockey and I think is really big at the heart of the story, because no one took accountability for Kyle Beach. And I can tell you, Pablo, this is a topic they're not going to let go, and it's something to follow over the next coming days, weeks, probably months.
Emily, with a story like this that is so, in retrospect, staggeringly mishandled, But I'm wondering what the NHL, what you expect them to do to make good on the fact that their league and one of their teams failed someone so badly.
So what the NHL has done so far is they sent out a memo to teams last week, and they called it Fostering a Safe and Inclusive Culture. And it basically just reaffirms things that they have told teams over the last several years. These weren't explicit instructions in 2010, but it's how the league has acted recently. And it basically says any league personnel and players are required to immediately report to Gary Bettman or Bill Daly, who's the deputy commissioner, all conduct that's clearly inappropriate, unlawful, or demonstrably abusive. And basically what the league is saying is if something happens, don't go to your teams, come to us, we'll handle it. Now, I do know there are some people who look at that and say, well, if there's unlawful conduct, why are we going to the NHL? Go to law enforcement authorities. Like, that's who you should be going to. And I think these are questions that are going to percolate over the next couple of weeks of what are the best practices here, because the league does have a hotline where people can call anonymously with issues if they don't feel comfortable reporting it to Gary Bettman or Bill Daly. But even still, that just doesn't feel like enough.
Emily, as you report this story that is still unfolding here, obviously this is a sport that you love. It's a sport that you've been covering for so long. What are you learning that you didn't know before?
You know, hockey, one of the reasons that we love the sport is that it's so team-oriented. Again, guys don't use the pronoun I. They say we or you. If you think of a star player besides a goalie, he's only playing a third of a game. You're so dependent on that team environment. And I think it's such a beautiful thing, but I think what we've learned in this Kyle Beach case is that it can also be a harmful thing if you take it too seriously and you take it to too many extremes and you value that team over everything, including human lives and human trauma. And I think those are the conversations that are going to start happening that unfold out of this. And I think that Kyle Beach coming forward, not just with the lawsuit, but coming forward with his name, was such an empowering moment for the next generation, because guys are realizing that, you know what, it is okay to speak up and be above the team if something really wrong did happen to you.
Emily Kaplan, thanks for joining us and thanks for staying on this story.
Thanks, Pablo, for covering it.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.